Welcome back to the Skits and Giggles podcast. I am Pascal, chief instigator of the show and your host. I'm joined by my co-host and our resident engineer, the new Kirk to my hoagie, Bryson. How's it going today, buddy?
Hey, Pascal, going good. But let's cut to the chase because I'm really excited about this talk with Abby. She goes on to tell us a little bit about how she came into racing, what racing means to her, what she's trying to accomplish with her racing. And finally, we get to hear about her and Anna setting up a team. And we finally get to answer this mystery question about what kind of stuff they're running, because Anna couldn't spill the beans before. That really irked me last time.
Well, before we get to that, let's just briefly do our spiel with the social and where you guys can find more information about the Skits and Giggles podcast. We are currently most active on our Instagram, where you can skit right into our DMs and follow along at Skits and Giggles. And you can find our website with all the relevant links and info under the URL skitsandgiggles.com. Also, if you guys like what we're doing and want to know what's up, just give us a follow on Spotify. Hit subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you listen to great podcasts. Right, with that out of the way, let's get to the conversation with Abby. We had a ton of fun and we hope you guys enjoy it too. Catch you after the show. Let's talk about cats and dogs. As you know, we've had Anna Newkirk on the other day, at the end of the year, and we've had some very questionable stories about cats, borders, smuggling, and all that. So that obviously brought us to the question, is it are our followers dog followers or cat followers? I put a little story up on our Instagram and asked that, and then we found out that 57% of our followers on Instagram are rooting for team cats, which is a bit concerning as a dog person. So Abby, where do you stand on this issue?
So I would say I'm a dog person. I grew up with dogs around the house, and I absolutely love dogs because they're just more huggable than cats are. Cats tend to run away. And I feel like cats really just like come around when they need you and then they leave you when they don't need you or don't want you. And I feel like dogs are just way more emotional and they're just always there for you. And I feel like that's what pets are for. You know, they're just there for you. They're your buddy. And I feel like cats just kind of, you know, they come and go when they want and they run away when they want and they're hard to catch and they just eat your food and leave. So I'm more of a dog person, but I catch myself really falling in love with some cats lately. So, you know, it's questionable.
Oh, well, I guess with that, we have to say welcome to the Skits and Giggles podcast. Abby, how's it going today?
I'm great. I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
Yeah, we're not bad. Bryson, how are you doing?
Wow, I'm really good. I saw the Lion King once in a live Lion King. So I'd say I'm a cat person as well.
All right. So you probably disrupted our statistics on the Instagram feed. Well, anyway, enough of the cats and dogs discussion. Let's start talking a little bit about bikes. So so Abby, why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got into riding bikes?
Actually, it started out at high school. We had a mechanics workshop, and I think it was about in eighth grade when I actually got into fixing bikes before I got into riding bikes. And through that little mechanics club, I guess it was just a few guys and one really motivated teacher, teaching kids how to fix bikes. And these dudes rode downhill. And actually, that's how I got into mountain biking, was straight into downhill. I never rode cross country, no enduro. It was just downhill. And this one guy always had an extra bike because he had just bought himself a new one, hadn't sold his old one yet. So I just started using his extra bike, and it was actually a Kona operator, like one of those really heavy old aluminum ones. Yeah, it was the good stuff. We just started like treading down our local hills, and I crashed so many times because I had absolutely no idea what I was doing. I just kind of followed them and I just went for it, and it was really fun. And I kind of just stuck with it.
And I always wonder, I mean, we had the same conversation with Anna as well. And obviously Anna and I, we've grown up pretty much in the same spot. How do you get into World Cup downhill racing from riding in a place where that doesn't actually have that much elevation or any long tracks where you could actually train for downhill?
That is a really good question. I started out by these dudes were like, hey, you're really fast. And I was like, am I? And they were like, yeah, you're really fast. So then they kind of like motivated me and kind of pushed me to go to this Rookies Cup in Winterberg. It's in like central Germany. And it doesn't have a lot of elevation meters either. I'd say it's kind of like similar to where I live in Germany. But I ended up winning that Rookies Cup by like a solid 10 second gap. And that was my first race ever. And that got me like hyped. And all these guys were like, oh my gosh, you got to keep going, keep doing this. And so I hopped into the German Downhill Cup. And then it was just like races around Germany. And I have the luxury of living in a place where we do have a downhill track. We have like one downhill track and everything else is kind of enduro-y. But so I could always train a little bit here. And then I would just like go to lots of races in Germany. And then I ended up having a whole bunch of fun there and it was actually pretty successful. So I ended up joining the elite category, doing the German races, doing the hop up to European races, just like right across the border in Austria, and in the Czech Republic and stuff. And then I guess the next step after European Cups, and that were like, I would say they were pretty successful, was World Cups. Because I don't know, I really wanted to. And I guess if you really want something, you just manifest it and then you just go and do it. And I guess I went through all the steps and then I tried myself at World Cups. And last year was my first World Cup full season where I did all of them.
Okay. And were you happy with the season overall or a lot of learnings or?
It was a lot of learning. That's good. That's a really good way to describe it, actually. It started out a bit rough. It started out with Leo Gang. That was a mud show and it was super hard to navigate. My equipment wasn't running so well either. So it was a lot of struggles to deal with at that race. I also didn't end up finishing it the way I wanted to, but I learned a lot there. And since I didn't actually start mountain biking until I was 16, I feel like I started pretty late and I'm 23 now. So, it's been actually 7 years now. Oh, yay. Going straight into downhill and stuff, I feel like I missed out on a lot of like experience in different scenarios and stuff. So I'm still gaining that, like a lot of experience factors that even younger riders than I am have already because they started earlier. It's still like it's piling up with me. So it was definitely a learning season last year, but it ended really well. So I was really happy.
But have you experimented with other disciplines or have you literally just stuck with downhill ever since? Because, I mean, that kind of would play towards, this bike time and bike skills and, you know, different nuances of riding, et cetera. Or are you just, you know, laser focused on downhill and going fast?
I'm definitely laser focused on going fast, but not just downhill. I did do an EWS last year. And one enduro race in 2020. So I'm feeling my way into that. But I actually got my first enduro bike like 3 years ago. So it's not been a long time. I had only downhill bikes for the first 3 years. And I guess it was just what I wanted at the time and also what I could afford at the time. And it's just, so I did do an enduro race. It is, as Anna likes to call it, a type 2 pain. So it's difficult. It's something else. It was fun, but I'm currently more successful in downhill. So maybe I'll just like focus on downhill and just like, you know, always throw in a little EWS once a year or something, you know, just, you know, sprinkle in the type 2 fun.
Yeah, building on your previous achievements, definitely one way to keep yourself boosted, keep yourself motivated. But when you think about it, you're racing against the world's fastest on World Cup tracks, you know, in downhill. And of course you did an EWS and some other enduro, but have you said to yourself already, like, I've made it, I'm here? Cause it looks like you've taken like this straight line progression.
I try to tell myself that, you know, like I try to tell myself, like, look at where you're at. It's pretty cool. And you are racing with the world's fastest, and you race at the world championships, which is actually a pretty big thing. But I am not where I want to be yet. Like I always have to take a step back, look at it from an outside perspective and be like, dude, you have made it this far. Like, don't second guess yourself. You're on the right track. You're doing the right thing. You know, just keep going. Because sometimes when you don't get the results that you're hoping for, or when I don't get the results I'm hoping for, or what I expected of myself, I have like slight motivation dips. But then I try to do exactly what you just said. Like, just like, you're racing with the world's fastest. Like, give yourself a break, but also keep going. I do think in some perspectives I've made it, but I want to keep making it, and I want to make it even further.
Okay, so it sounds like you have some big goals.
I do. I think goals are important.
Sure. Maybe enlighten us?
Well, this is a very dip into my personal life. No, I'm kidding. So I got a top. Top 15 finish at Snowshoe World Cup. Before that, I was always like scratching at qualifying for the finals. It was always like, I was a few seconds off so many times. It was really starting to annoy me how close it was a few times. I was like, come on, this cannot be it. And then it like finally happened at Snowshoe that I made it into the top 15. And I was like, see, this is what I'm talking about. And, And what was the cool thing was that I didn't just make it. I actually made it. I qualified 14th, which was cool. So not even just 15th. I've actually never been 15th. I've been 16th, 17th, and then 14th. I feel like ever since I got that little taste of it actually working, you know, like everything playing together and everything really just like, all the gears working together for that one at that, well, in this case, it was the last World Cup of the season last year. I definitely want to make that the consistent level where I am not consistently scratching at finals. I am consistently making finals. That's like my next baby step. And then of course it'll be like, I already putting my sights on top tens, and then it would be top fives, you know?
Okay, so it sounds like a pretty familiar story for a lot of up-and-comers. Not saying you're not unique. Of course you are. But maybe what is it that brought you to that position in Snowshoe? Was there something you had an aha, eureka moment? Or is it just kind of all accumulating together and finally at the end of the year you're like, yes, okay, it paid off?
It was definitely an accumulation of a lot of things, mostly being annoyed at not making it. And I was like, come on. Like, I think it gave me that last little push of my, like, on myself to like really just like grip it and rip it and just be like, okay, this is the last World Cup of the season. What do you have to lose? Cause I know I'm afraid of getting hurt sometimes because I have had a few injuries in the past, and it's been like a little block in my head for a while. And then I was like, you know what? Even if you get hurt this one, it was the last one, so you may as well go fast, right? It was a great venue. I loved the track. It was really fun. I had a great time there with Anna. And my bike was running well. And I don't know. Everything just came together. The weather was nice. It's important. The weather's important. It can really make or break a race.
But I want to backtrack a little bit, because you know the element that we've not talked about yet is that this mountain biking and downhill racing and all that is not the only thing you're active in sports in, right? So you're studying sports science, if I remember correctly, and you're playing a lot of other sports, right? And we haven't talked about transferable skills, right? And the experience with competition and getting yourself ready for a race and getting, you know, the headspace and mental game, etc. So can you talk a little bit about the other things that you're doing and that you have experience with that helped you along the way?
I would love to. So I feel like ever since I started doing sports, I started out with soccer when I was really young. I still play soccer. And then I really got into snowboarding, and then I got into mountain biking. And I feel like in each one of those sports, I always thought like, hey, I want to do this at a professional level. Like soccer, I used to want to be a professional soccer player. Then I got into snowboarding, and then I wanted to be a professional snowboarder. And I just wanted it. And I kind of always felt like I could deal with the pressure, and I love the competition. Like some people, I guess, do sports because it's like healthy and because it's fun and everything. And I did that because it was healthy and fun too. But I loved seeing the stats and like being like, hey, this is the difference between this person and this person and that kind of stuff. And like this speed and this speed. And like I used to Strava my snowboard runs. And I remember going down like the Eiger North Face once on my snowboard. Like there's like a run down it. And I tried going so fast because I wanted to get like a really high speed. So I was like tracking it and everything. And I feel like I always loved going fast. So probably first got to experience it in snowboarding, and then in mountain biking, because speed, need for speed right here. And as for mental stuff, I'm a big head person. Like I also study psychology as my minor. And sports, psychology is one of my favorite subjects, and like all of the things you can unlock, just by how you think, what you think, what you do, what your head's doing, you know, and, how much better you can make yourself just by, little tips and tricks, you know, to like, get your mind in the right place. I love that. And I feel like, you can really notice the difference when you're at a really, really high level. And, maybe it's just like a consistent self-experiment. I don't know.
Oh, well, I mean, talking of those tricks, right? So we reached out on our socials a little bit for some listener inputs. And interestingly enough, a theme that's coming up across the question is music. And Anna actually specifically asks, what's your pre-race playlist? P.S. I'm a big fan. So what's up with your pre-race playlist?
I think Anna might be my biggest fan. No, okay. Actually, I'm a huge fan of her pre-race playlist. And I think it's because we have a lot of the similar music in our pre-race playlists. Music is a big part of my life. And like, I'm probably like 24/7 listening to music if I'm not like on a podcast, you know? It's filled with punk rock and some Eminem and
Mom Spaghetti.
Yes, Mom Spaghetti nice. In there. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I don't know, punk rock and Eminem and like rap gets me into like the mood of like attacking, I guess, because I kind of view it as attacking a track, you know, like really just like laying it all out, you know, just full on going for it. And I wouldn't say aggressive music gets me into it, but aggressive music gets me into it.
Okay. Well, we have a follow-on question from a different listener, and he wants to know, what's your favorite song to get you pumped for a really terrible training session?
Oh, a terrible training session. Honestly, I really do love training sessions. I think I'm the kind of person who, maybe this is also why I like to do sports at this level, because I love pushing myself to the limit. And that's why I think a terrible training session at the same time is an awesome training session.
So think about VO2 max intervals, or, you know, some 30-30s or some really unpleasant session, be it on the trainer or on the road bike or something like that.
Okay. I'm going to go with My Chemical Romance. That's the band. The album is Danger Days, and the song is Na Na Na. Na 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 Na. Yeah, it's really good.
Okay, yeah. Very good. We'll note that down. We'll put it up in the show notes for people to listen to in their own time when they get ready for their next training session.
Love it.
One thing I want to come back to is, you know, talked about football, you talked about snowboarding.
I talked about soccer. Hold on. It's not football.
Sorry. Soccer, we have to say. Because obviously American context, you talk about soccer and football. And here in Europe, we talk about football. But All of those sports, they have in common that there's also, of course, a female side to it. And there is quite a disparity between male and female competitors. And I just want to know if you have any experience or can shed some light onto how you feel, how mountain biking is doing with giving especially female athletes the support they need and giving them the platform for them to succeed and perform.
I think mountain biking is doing actually pretty well in terms of giving women a platform. I love how it's grown in the past year, actually a year or two. It's grown so much. I love seeing it. And what a lot of female riders bring into the sport is beautiful to watch, especially in free ride right now. Like there's so much stoke going on. And there's some really heavy hitters getting into it. Well, not even just getting into it, but getting like public about it and really stepping into the spotlight. And in downhill, you know, there's always been like those one or two women that were famous and like they were big. But now when there's like a lot of women that are big and like famous and well, not a lot, but more than one or two. There's like, I don't know, there's four or five that I think a lot of people know. And at least if you're a mountain biker, you've definitely heard of at least like, I don't know, six or seven women. And that's different than how it used to be. Like I used to know like one woman that was a mountain biker. It used to be Rachel Atherton. It was like Rachel Atherton and the men. And it was kind of like, okay. And now there's just like, there's so many big names out there. There's like Camille Ballange, Rachel Atherton, Nina Hoffman, you know, and Anna Newkirk, you know, there's just more spotlight on the women now. And it's important because they're such a big part of the sport now. And there's so many women out there and that are getting into mountain biking. And I like to think it's because of the representation that's grown in the cycling community. Like the appreciation for women and also like they're more visible on advertising, you know? That used to be pretty much only men. I've been working in bike shops since 2017. And I remember on all of our advertising things that we had, there was always only men. And I don't know if it, like, I really realized it until I thought about it, but it really did something. I was just like, is this jersey even good for me? Because I've never seen a woman wear it, but I guess I have one now. And it was never the right size. But yeah, now there's like women specific clothing, women specific bikes, which I don't absolutely think we need, but at least they're trying, you know.
Who inspired you when you were, you know, 16 years old, getting into racing downhill and riding? Who were you looking up to when you were younger?
Well, as previously mentioned, Rachel Atherton, because she actually looks like a lot like my mom, which is a weird thing, but she has the exact same facial structure as my mother. And I used to think it was so funny. And I was always be like, ah, look at this, mom. She looks like you. Like, I guess I could look like that someday, you know? I don't know. It was a weird connection, I think, my little adolescent brain made. But yeah, Rachel Atherton. And then pretty soon I also heard about Lee Donovan. And so those two were probably the big ones. And then I became friends with Emmy Siegenthaler pretty early on in my riding career. And then, I don't know, she just really inspired me just as a person, like as not just as an idol, but also like as a friend and a racer. And like, I was like looking up to her, but also like talking to her at the same time. And it was like a weird like level and it was cool. It was good.
Are you doing anything to inspire the next generation of female racers? You know, you're now in entering your prime, let's say. You're 23, as you said. So you're kind of in the spotlight. And are you using your platform to inspire other female racers?
Yeah, I really, really try to. It's really important to me. That is, I don't know why, but I think it's like part of my mission. And I do things like I always give my gear from the previous season, you know, like if I switch sponsors or something and I can't use the gear anymore, cause it has the wrong brand on it or whatever. Or I just have new stuff and I don't necessarily have the space to keep the old stuff, or somebody else needs it more than I do. I try to give it back to younger writers who can't afford it, who don't have the support from their parents yet, or because the gear is expensive. We all know that. And I feel like that's one of the biggest hurdles of getting into mountain biking is the gear, and having the right gear, and also not saving where you can and making it kind of unsafe. I see a lot of people riding around without protectors and stuff because they're so expensive and maybe they don't need it, but I feel like it's really important. So I tend to give back some of my older kits to young kids at the school I used to go to, and to that club that I started out in, the, you know, fixing bikes at, or kids that write to me on Instagram. I get some DMs about like, hey, do you have old jerseys, or can I buy your old protectors or something? I'm like, you know what, here.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I try to do that. I also coach kids groups at the local bike park and also enduro classes here. And whenever I see kids on bikes, I make it a point to be like, dude, you're awesome. You're doing well. You're really good at that. Like, did you just do that corner? Like, did you just take the inside line? And like, I don't know. I try to hype them up, get them stoked.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, that's it's very important. I mean, obviously not only for kids in general, but also I think personally, I mean, we obviously face the same challenge myself with my own kids, right? Is to also encourage girls. And that's actually a funny story, is that how I met Anna in person for the first time is because she gave away some of her jerseys at the end of the season, and I asked her for one for my daughter. So and she's actually wearing it proudly these days, so she's growing into it. So so that'll be good times next summer when we go riding again. All right, well, we talked a lot about Anna already. There's obviously a little bit more significance to this topic and person.
Gosh, no.
I guess by the time this episode is coming out, it will be hopefully out of the bag that you guys are forming a team. Can you tell us a little bit about what you guys have planned for the year?
Yeah, I'd love to. So, I mean, as you guys know, or you don't know, but Anna Newkirk is my best friend. And we've been friends since we met in Vinterberg. I think it must have been 2017, if I'm not mistaken. But we ended up going to almost all of the races together the last 2 years. And she was always on a different team than I was. And I was on a different team. But we always still ended up going together because, I mean, we don't live super close. We live like 3 hours apart, but I always kind of like put her on my route to drive her places because she didn't have a driver's license and she didn't have a car. And once I had my driver's license in my car, you know, it was always more fun to go two people in a car than alone. So I always made it a point to pick her up, and we ended up just spending all of the time at the races together. We rode together. We had accommodations together. We cooked together, went shopping together, did everything. So basically, we were each other's support for a long time. And now I'm really happy to announce that we are starting a team together, and not just any team, a UCI downhill mountain bike team.
Whoop! Awesome. Very, very stoked for you guys, just to get that out there.
Yeah, thank you. I am too. I'm super stoked for us.
What is the team going to be called?
This is exciting. All right, so it's going to be Beyond Racing, a race team with a purpose.
Oh, nice. Talk about the purpose.
The purpose is to give people an insight to what racing is for us. So for Anna and I, and like some behind the scenes, you know, how it works, how we got into it, what the fun stuff is about it and what the hard stuff is about it, why we do it, you know, just like, and a really big purpose is to get more people stoked on bikes and more people out riding. We're actually working together with the Grow Cycling Foundation, formed by Elliot Jackson, the coolest commentator I've ever heard. I mean, you guys are cool, but have you heard his voice?
Oh, absolutely. Big fan. Oh, big fan.
I know. He's awesome, right? Anyways, yeah, he's a big part of our development. He heard about Anna and I's idea, and he was like, guys, this is awesome. Like, how can I help? So he's been a big help in like finding some sponsors and also just like motivating us and like really reassuring us that what we're doing is a cool thing and is a good thing. And that's really important. Yeah. So we, with him, are going to, like with his Grow Cycling Foundation, we're going to be giving away some spots in our coaching sessions, because Anna and I are not just going to be racing. We are also going to be coaching as the Beyond Racing team. Yeah, so that's a really big fundamental part of our team.
That sounds super awesome, and I'm extremely excited to see where you guys can take this, because this sounds super promising, and I hope you make the effort to put the content out, and because I think that's a very interesting story, and I guess one of the more interesting stories that are coming out this year. Of course, there's some other cool stories this year, but that'll be a very cool one to follow. I'm really excited for this.
Yeah, we have big plans.
Will there be, the typical social media? There'll be vlogs. There'll be, video series and stuff like that. Or do you have that? Are you still planning that out?
Oh, yeah, we're definitely going to have vlogs. We're not going to have any vlogs. We're going to have the best vlogs. Because we know how much Anna loves to be in front of a camera.
Oh, she loves it.
It's the best. She gets so awkward. I love it. We're going to do vlogs. We're going to do tutorials, how-tos. We're going to start a TikTok channel because that's the best. I'm kidding. We're going to have an Instagram page, Beyond Racing MTB. And we're going to do some interviews, some podcasts, and we're probably going to be working with some of our sponsors to make specific video series at World Cups, but that is to be announced.
Man, I would be so stoked to have Elliot Jackson come up to me and be like, you go, girl. But at the same time, are you maybe a little bit intimidated that it's like a really steep hill to climb, and that maybe randomly this podcast will be selected for the PB like podcast roundup, and then all of a sudden you'll get super famous? That would intimidate me.
It's not intimidating, because I feel like it's been a long time coming. I feel like I've been in mountain bike, I've been in gravity teams the past, like, I've been riding for Pivot Cycles for 4 years now. And I remember the very first team I got into got like a whole bunch of hype. And then, the team after that was also kind of in the spotlight. And, now it's just time to be in a different spotlight and to be like, I don't know, just hop onto a new stage, which would be the downhill mountain bike World Cup series, you know? Anna and I we've been in big teams, and, now it's just time to be on a UCI team. And we're excited to be doing that for ourselves and to be taking that step together. And we first actually came up with this idea, I think like a year ago or something. I was like, dude, it'd be so cool to be on a team together. And she was like, yeah, dude. But then we were on different teams. We had signed different contracts, so that wasn't going to happen that year. But fun fact, in August, on our way to World Champs in Val di Sole, I like re-mentioned the idea because the timing was right. Anna didn't have a team to sign, like that she wanted to sign with. I didn't have a team I wanted to re-sign with. So we just kind of like, I was like, dude, remember that thing we talked about? And she's like, dude, that thing. And then we were like, what are we going to call that thing? And then we just started like shooting out the most random name ideas. And it was like, wait, we're actually going to do this? And then at World Champs, the stoke grew, and we were like in a room together at US Cycling. We had like this, like all of the riders were like, there's two riders to a room. And we were in a room together, and it was like, dude, we should start working on our portfolio. We still need to start talking to sponsors. And then we were like, this is like really happening. And then we just like kept like going. And then at the after party in Snowshoe is when we talked to Elliot. So it was a few, it was like a month of like, we're going to do this. And then when we like told somebody about it, like we hadn't told anybody about it because we were like, is this a good idea? Like, yeah, it's a good idea. Like, we can do this. And then we told Ellie about it. And he's like, guys, this is a really good idea. We were like, okay, yeah. Let's go. And then, yeah.
What a snowball effect.
It was so cool. It was an experience. Yeah.
It reminds me of that Fleetwood Mac song. Do you like Fleetwood Mac?
I do. My mom loves them. So.
You Can Go Your Own Way. Do you know that tune?
Yes.
Yeah, yes. So right. I love Fleetwood.
We'll make that our jingle.
Could. Yeah. Well, don't give up on My Chemical Romance just yet.
Oh, I would never give up on them. They have my heart and soul.
So I want to know more about your setup. Like, you're sharing like derailleur sponsors, or like what's going on there?
I'm going to start with like, I guess, biggest to smallest sponsor. I feel like that's a good way to go through it. And also I'm super excited to like announce this, but, Anna and I are going to be Muckoff team riders. and we're actually going to be doing like pretty cool, video and photo stuff with Muckoff. So I'm really, really excited about that. They're one of our main sponsors. And for the past few years, Anna and I have both been on Maxis, and I am really excited to keep being on Maxis. And they were super on board with the idea. They think it's awesome. We love their tires, so they're happy, we're happy, they're stoked, we're stoked. So, yeah. then there's also going to be Fidlock, which is another big name. They make those super cool magnetic bottles that you can just, like, throw onto your bike and they just stay. Yeah. They're on board and they're super hyped. SR Sun Tour, I've been riding for them for, actually, 1 year now, but one really good year. Or 2 years, actually. I'm not really sure. But I'm happy with them. And Anna wants to try it. And so they're on board. And also very happy about that. Then there's... Let me think. Oh, Unique Clothing. You probably know them from like the Cammy's team from last year. Yeah. Or from Anna. Sorry. Wow. My brain just glitched. Yeah, from Anna. They're going to be doing our clothing and we're going to have like really awesome custom kits. And that is, we're going to look so fresh. You're not even going to know what hit you. Then there's, Liat keeping us protected. Yeah. And 77 Designs doing our, chain guards and like little stuff on the bike, you know, like the stuff that like you don't notice right away. But if you like look into the detail of the bike, you're like, whoa, that is so stealthy. Yeah. Hand ups for the hands. Yeah, those are pretty much the, big one that I love, DT Swiss. Very happy to have their wheels keeping us rolling. Yeah, the only thing we don't actually have settled yet is what frames we're going to be riding. Yeah. So.
Oh, it's just small detail.
You know, yeah, it's casual. Yeah, just look fresh, bike second.
So you got a full race schedule coming up. What are you doing? Where are you going to start?
So full World Cup series, including like the overseas ones like Canada, Fort William, USA, you know. U.S. champs, so the championships in Colorado. Crankworks, once they bring out their dates, you know, because I personally love Crankworks. I got like a fifth spot at Crankworks Rotorua in 2019. And that was insane for me back then because I was the second faster than Camille Balanche and a second slower than Emmy. And I was like, this feels good. Yeah. And I think that was like the first race where I really realized that I could like make it on the international circuit. And yeah. So I that's why I love racing Crankworks. I have this undying love for Crankworks events. So it'll be... Downhill World Cup, Crankworks World Tour, US champs, one or two EWSs. Yeah, that's the plan for now. Maybe the US Pan American champs, you know, but we'll know that by the time this podcast comes out.
Crankworks is rad. It's like riding your bike at a music festival. Just everyone's hyped and it's a good atmosphere. But
that's a good analogy.
You know, it takes a lot of planning, a lot of organization, and you know, not only just getting the sponsors on board and that whole hurricane, but figuring out flights, figuring out where to stay, who to stay with, how to set up your stuff when you're there. Like, I know you've been on the circuit a while and you kind of have a little momentum going and understanding, but you know, now you have two people and I would think it just get multiplied, like the difficulty.
We also have two know-how heads. So, Anna has her strengths, I have my strengths, and we really, we add to each other's energy, and everything we do just becomes way smoother when we do it together, because she checks me, I check her, she fixes me, I fix her, you know? If we forget something, the other person remembers it. If one person is bad at something, the other person's good at it. We kind of just like, this is why I'm so excited for this, because we just work together like perfect gears. You know when a shifting system on your bike works just perfectly, like it's a fresh derailleur, you know, you got a fresh chain, fresh cassette, everything's shifting perfectly. That's us. We just work. And that's why this team's going to work. And this is why it's worked so far. It's been fun building it. It's been fun talking to sponsors and getting all this stuff sorted out. It's exciting. It's exciting seeing, like, really starting to feel how it all works and how much effort needs to go into what things. Every contract we sign is like, yes, we did this. We made this happen. And it's such a good feeling. It's just like you're building a house and you know it'll work. You're not doubting it. And you have all the pieces. You just always need, like, you know, you need your building crew to put it together, and she's my builder and I'm her builder. And like, we both construct at the same time. And it's really, really fun.
That's a great way to look at it.
Looking forward to seeing how this story develops.
Yeah. I want to see all these details come out.
All right. Maybe looking forward a little bit, you know, if this project beyond racing is going to be successful, is that going to be your jam for the future of your racing career? Or is this just a stepping stone to maybe something bigger and better? I mean, of course, you talked about figuring out all that sort of stuff, like, you know, the flights and the parts and the contracts and the travel and all that, this sort of stuff. Sorting that out yourself, of course, that, you know, then brings the question in my head, at least. It's like, okay, well, maybe all that energy that I have for this sort of stuff, if I would focus that energy on racing and getting better and improving myself and furthering my skills and all these kind of things, you know, is factory at the horizon ever going to be a goal, or are you planning to make the best of your way?
So, as I said, the timing was right for this to happen. This was either a now or never thing. Because if this hadn't have happened, Anna and I would have both, like, gone on to, like, find something else, but it wasn't going to be something together. So, what we're doing right now is something that we wanted to do and we really wanted to try. And I'm really excited to see it work out. But, of course, a factory team offers you a type of luxury at races that you can only get in a factory team. And if that opportunity arises for either of us in the future, it would be foolish to turn it down. Depending on how this develops, of course, as of right now, I guess we could see it as a sort of really big, solid stepping stone that you can stand on for a long time because you're not going to go underwater with it. But yeah, of course, if there's something bigger for us in the future, then I would definitely, I wouldn't say no to it. And that would be a whole new adventure to cross, and we cross that bridge when we get there. But I'd say this is definitely something that we can work with and build if we decide that's where we want to go. Like, it's season 2023, 2024, you know, but,
okay.
Yeah.
What, put yourself in your future shoes, let's say, you know, 2025, and you look back on 23, 24, 22, and how Beyond Racing has turned out, and how would you say this has been a success?
Well, I mean, that's only something the future can hold, then. But I am really proud of where we've gotten to so far. Honestly, it's been such a fun experience, and I'm already proud to be racing for this team this year. And it's always going to be our thing. And even if we, this group builds into something way bigger, it's still going to be like this, this project, a baby that we like started and like worked on and like poured our heart and soul into. And then, you know, if it goes, it goes. If we both like at some point end up somewhere else, and that's how it is. But I'm always going to be happy and proud that this happened and this worked out. And I'm really excited for this season. That's just like looking directly forward. This is going to be good. It's going to be really good. And it's always going to be good. Even looking back, you know?
Cool. I mean, it sounds like you've figured your stuff out, but you know, if someone that listens to this, you know, wants to help you out and wants to be part of this journey, how can they help you?
Honestly, you know, like supporting us on social media, because looking for sponsors, actually, when it started out for me on social media, and it's still a big, like social media is still probably the biggest part of it right now in my career. Because I feel like as long as you're not getting like top five podium finishes at a World Cup, you're going to have a lot of followers, and you're going to have people interested in your bike life and not just your racing career, because that's what it's about to the sponsors nowadays. And supporting us on social media, big thing. You know, if you have a company that's down to work with us, you know, hit us up. We have a team email account now. That was really fun to make. also DM us, you know, whatever. We're always open to hear every sort of collaboration, and we're open for like really fun stuff, creative stuff. Of course, also always financial support from companies is always big things, but yeah, mostly just like getting out and riding and listening to like podcasts and interviews that we do, and following us is going to be a big help already. So yeah.
All right. Well, I offered Anna some of our water bottles the other day when we went out for a ride, and she turned it down. But obviously now that makes sense when you said that, you know, Fidlock is one of your sponsors. Are you guys working on other stuff like merch and stuff, or water bottles, or anything else that, you know, people can look forward to?
Yeah, we're definitely going to have merch. Anna and I absolutely love merch. And we think that people that follow us and follow our lifestyle are also going to love merch. And we have this really cool logo, and I am so excited to show you guys in a few weeks. But the logo is, I think the kids would say, dope. And so we're going to put that on a few t-shirts and maybe a few hats, you know, and hoodies even, you know, if people are interested. And we'll get that out there, and we'll definitely make it available to our followers and friends and fans. And so that's actually a really good way to support us, you know, buy our merch.
Abby, I think it's super cool that you have embraced social media so well. I've kind of drifted away from it over the past few years. But I think of it as a really big sign of the times. And I think it's enabled a lot of people across our dear planet for lots of good as well. So, for example, you know, one high-level example is like Daniel Ricciardo from F1. He basically arrived on the scene. He's got the skills, but he basically used his social media just to, you know, show who he is, just who he is, not who he is as a racer, but who he is as a person. And I think that helped him kind of just be who he is in his own sense and do what he does best. And it's racing. And, you know, now he's turned into a superstar. And I think it's also helped sort of like the whole like maker movement, or like the whole the make yourself movement, self-made man type of thing, or woman, or being, whatever it is. And it's like allowing people to show who they are, allowing them to be comfortable with themselves, and like, yeah, get support in that way. So,
you know, when you started out with saying that you kind of got like, just got away from it a little bit over the past years. Sometimes it annoys me. Sometimes it annoys me to death, and I don't want to do anything on it. But the whole point about being yourself on social media and being able to embrace like the individuality of you, and you're not just a bike racer. You also have a life. You have fashion sense. You have music taste. You love cats. You love dogs. you make weird faces. Like Anna loves to take up really, really close selfies of her face. And I feel like that's her thing. Because she tries to make fun of me sometimes when I post like a story, and then she'll like post the story and like mine will be like a really thought through selfie where the lighting's good and my face looks good. And Anna's just like, look at my triple chin. And I'm like, come on, bro. Like, you really had to flex on me like that. But social media, it can, it's a blessing and a curse at the same time. I mean, it's hard to keep up with it a lot of the time. But I think if you just like take a step back, you do as much as you want to do, and you do as much as you have to. Sometimes, you know, if you're not really feeling it, you'd like, hey, I'm just going to put this post out there so that they know I'm still alive. And they know I'm still doing what I love. But sometimes everybody knows that you need to take a step away from it sometimes. And I feel like it's really important to find that balance between social media helping you and social media hurting you. I started doing a TikTok account too, just for the fun of it. And people liked my content, so I just kept doing it because I was enjoying it. People were enjoying it. And my Instagram, I really try to keep it down to earth. You know, it's not all, I really do not embrace the fake Instagram lifestyle. So it's all about keeping it down to earth and showing people that you're not just somebody on the internet. You're actually a real person, and being relatable. So I guess I'm still tiptoeing on finding my niche in the whole social media, but it's a long process. And you know, sometimes you're closer, sometimes you're not, but it's always fun. Like, as long as you're good with it.
Finding the niche, it's one thing. It's kind of been on my mind because, you know, just like mountain biking, it's really diversified so much. You know, at first it was like XC and downhill. And then there was all these different splinters of the disciplines, and then marathons and 24s. And like, then you have like cyclocross, and everything's blending and mixing. And now you have gravel. Okay. So anyways, there's several disciplines of cycling, and, you know, even more of than there were before. The same, I think this whole trend is, yeah, part of our society. And that's the same thing with social media. It's like, you can try to find your niche or where you fit into the certain category, or you can kind of just do your thing. And this has been now proven with social media, is like, you do your thing and you all of a sudden are a different category. And there's a ton of people who are also in that category. And all of a sudden everyone realizes that that's now a category, and it starts being called dope or whatever. I think it's just amazing how it's not only happening in social media, but it's, you know, exactly with mountain biking. Because when I started mountain biking, there was free ride, downhill, cross country, all mountain was a term being thrown around, and you know, it's just even splintered even more. And now I don't even bother. It's just mountain biking. It's whether you're riding on a gravel or riding on a flat trail or a small woods section. It's, you know, your trail riding, your mountain biking.
Whatever you feel like.
I don't classify it anymore. But
no, it's whatever you feel like, whatever you want to vibe with at that time, you know.
But downhill is downhill.
Oh, come on. Downhill will always be downhill. Yeah. There's mountain biking, and then there's downhill.
All right. Well, we also have a couple more listener questions, and I think we just go through those before we wrap up the episode for today. We have another fun one from Anna, actually, and I really want to hear your take on this. She wants to know, would you rather race an XC bike DH or a DH bike for XC?
Actually, I've dreamt about this before, and it's definitely XC bike on a DH track, because I am not a big fan of pedaling. I'm not a big fan of pedaling DH bikes. And I just feel like racing a downhill bike on an XC track would be just super, like, it would be like, what do you call, like rubber, like, you know, oh gosh.
Endo-y.
In German, it's called...
It's like pushing a waterbed up the hill.
Yeah, you know, it's zieht sich wie Kaugummi, which means it pulls like gum. Like, it's hard. And I feel like racing an XC bike on a downhill track would be fun. It's a challenge I really want to do. I feel like the less suspension you have, the more technical ability you have to have. And like if you go on a downhill track, and it would be exciting. I would definitely need a dropper post. So I would do it with one of the modern XC bikes, you know, with a dropper post and maybe like the mini rear suspension. But it would definitely be that one. Yeah.
Okay. That's a good insight. So now after that downhill run on your XC bike, you're allowed to have a beer. And Max Greisberg, he wants to know what your favorite beer is for that occasion.
All right. So I feel like a few people are going to come at me for this, but I really like Velde Pils. Pils from this brewery near Heidelberg, where I live. Or Helles from brewery Chiemsee. Those are probably my two go-tos. I also do like Radler, but people always say Radler's not beer, so you know.
No, it's lemonade.
No, come on. It's good. It's good lemonade though. Yeah, if you drink enough of it, it'll be like
lemonade.
Beer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. We have a final one, a final listener question from Instagram handle at Jungans. What's your favorite part of off season?
It's definitely getting tattoos. I always wait for the off season to get a new tattoo or freshen up my tattoos or something. And I'm always very excited for that. Yeah. Oh, and going to university like a normal student. Honestly, I'm always so excited for that too, because during the race season, I don't have a lot of classes and I don't really attend a lot of university because I'm out racing so much and traveling. But in the off season, you know, I get to be a normal student, and you know, there's hard training, but there's also like parties and stuff, and I try to keep that for the off season, you know.
Okay, yeah, I can see that. All right. Well, to finish up, we also have our infamous closeout questions. Just quickly go through those, if that's okay. Well, why don't you talk us about that first bike that got you really stoked on riding?
I'm honestly going to say it wasn't the Kona, because that thing was a beast. It was like a tank. My first bike was a Propane. It was a Propane Rage. And I absolutely loved that bike. It was heavy as hell. The suspension didn't work so great. It was like an upside down fork. So it wasn't the best, but I loved it. And I broke a frame, but I got a new one. And that wasn't the bike that definitely like made me fall in love with it. I took the biggest jumps on it, heavy hits, won my first races on it. Yeah. I also have it tattooed. It's a tattoo on my leg. Everybody always asks what the bike is that I have tattooed, and it's that one with my first downhill bike. Yeah. No regrets.
All right. Next one. Imagine you are Harriet Schedini. I guess that's the right. Is that the right pronoun? Just checking.
Imagine you're
a bike magician extraordinaire, and you can make riding a bike more awesome for anyone by the stroke of a magic dropper post. What would you do?
Oof, that is a good question. Endless tire life. That tires don't like scrub off or tear. No punctures, you know, like unbreakable tires, but still with the amazing grip that Max's Tires offers. So, undestroyable tires, but like they just don't tear and they just don't lose their profile, you know. They just, you just go and you don't have to go through the pain of punctures, switching tubeless tires, you know just like pop them on, and if you want a different tread then you change it, but like, you know, the tire stays if you want it to. I feel like that'd be really fun, and you know, it'd save a lot of money for a lot of people. And it would help the environment because you wouldn't have as much like tires thrown away.
That does sound like an amazing idea. However, as a person who enjoyed most of his crazy, wacky adventures with tire malfunctions. I kind of feel like it would have taken away from my overall mountain bike experience, like coming up mountain biking. So, okay, story for another time. If you had these magical tires, would it make you skid better? Like, would you have the perfect skid with the perfect tires?
Okay, so if you had these tires and they have the, you know, like they have the amazing grip and everything, right? You could practice skids as many times as you want. You could skid down every fire road in practice, or you could skid around as much as you want and you wouldn't have to worry about having to get new tires. So I feel like practice makes perfect. And if you have the perfect like tires to practice, then you can just do it all the time. And then I don't know. I feel like it would give you more opportunities to skid it out.
Okay, so two birds with one stone. You won this one.
Thank you. I try. You know, I try to exceed.
Well, that was super awesome, Abby. Thank you very much. If our listeners have any questions or want to find out more about you, where can they find you? And of course, where can they find Beyond Racing?
So they can hit me up on Instagram. I actually try to answer all my DMs because I never want to be that kind of person that is too good for DMs. So I try to answer everybody. And it's Abby_Hoagie. You can also find Beyond Racing on Instagram. It'll be Beyond Racing MTB. We also will have a website coming up soon. You can also find us at races. Our pit is going to be right next to the huge SR Sun Tour pit. We're going to be right there where everybody can see us. You can always come up and talk to us if you see us riding around on trails or at races or at any other events, you know, in the shopping mall, you know, just to be like, hey guys. But yeah, just also on Facebook, you know, the usual.
Any shout outs you want to get off your chest before we close it up?
Shout out to Anna Newkirk, of course, you know, the OG. Shout out to probably my first team manager, Katrin Karkov, because I feel like she really like boosted me into the racing lifestyle. And I will forever appreciate her dedication and believing in me. Yeah. And shout out to Beyond Racing because it's going to be beyond awesome. Also, Elliot Jackson, good guy. And Grow Cycling Foundation, good stuff. Check it out on Instagram, follow them, support them.
Absolutely. We'll put those all in the show notes and you guys can find it there. Abby, again, this was super cool. Thank you for your time.
No, thank you.
Bryson, this was awesome. Thank you for your time.
It was a pleasure.
And I'll catch you guys some other time out on the trails, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. Hopefully soon.
Thanks for listening. We really hope you enjoyed this episode. As we mentioned at the top of the show, you can find all the links and the relevant info to this episode in the show notes. Also, if you enjoyed this episode, why don't you share it with your riding buddies? It really helps us grow our show and reach more cool people like you.
That's great advice, Pascal. I really enjoyed making the episode as well. And I'm really looking forward to all the cool stuff we're going to be doing in 2022. So stay tuned, guys.